On this episode, I am joined by Grace Madlabe, who is the CEO of Smart Start, an early learning social franchise in South Africa. She is involved in and responsible for developing strategies and leading Smart Start's strategic implementation across the country. Before joining Smart Start, she was the CEO of Love Life, a large-scale, comprehensive national youth leadership development and risk reduction organization in South Africa. She has extensive experience working in the social justice and development field, with particular interest in working with youth. Madlabe sits on several boards of commercial and non-commercial organizations, and a fellow of the Leadership and Innovation Network for Collaboration in the Children's Sector in South Africa. So join us as we discuss ECD policy landscape and innovation.
It's a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to meet you too. So I thought that I should maybe try and align the questioning, right, to Smart Start as well, sort of like as an innovation that is coming out in the education space. And I think this is important because Smart Start, a social franchise model aimed at providing early learning program for four-year-old children. Is it limited to four-year-old children or does it go above the four-year-olds?
It's 3 to 5 year-olds. So this is typically the age that would fall under grade RR before they, so they go out of Smart Start straight into grade R. So it's 3 to 5.
And then we know that Smart Start provides a solution to bring access, right? It sort of bridges that gap between those who have access and those who do not. And I believe it's also addressing more of a resourcing issue that is experienced most by people who are working in the ECD space. How are you bridging this gap?
So let me, hopefully I'll answer your question by this. Exactly what it is that we do. Okay. So as fully put it, we have multiple challenges in the early childhood development space, and in particular, in the early learning and stimulation space. On the one hand, we have in excess of 1 million children between the ages of 3 and 5 who continue to start school without the benefit of quality early education and stimulation. And so that's one set of challenges, and it's really complex. It's not something that, you know, can just be resolved by just providing supply, and I'll get back to that. Okay. But the other set of challenges we're sitting with is that, as you put in your introductory email, ECD or early learning is a partnership between civil society and government. Mm. And the regulatory framework that makes it possible requires that an entrepreneur register as an NPO and, you know, everything that goes with the nonprofit environment. That in itself not being bad, but basically set up and take on the cost of running the stimulation, the education, the preschool, let me put it that way. And government, if that provider or operator meets certain requirements, most of them being infrastructure, and also not necessarily in itself being a bad thing, because they are all directed at the protection of children.
Yeah.
They have to meet those minimum standards, and then government will have them registered and then funded. So that mechanism, you know, is born out of the need to protect children and make sure that they are cared for and educated in safe environments. The challenge is that that piece of our country, unfortunately, it's large because 60% or so of South Africa's children are poor, are in poor environments, live in poverty. Mm. And so there's no way that providers or operators in those communities could meet these compliance requirements as they stand. So we're sitting with a major exclusion, because if there's a need in that community, it doesn't mean that the fact that they don't meet compliance requirements, that they need to be met. Someone is going to start informally, they look after children under conditions that are not registrable and therefore not funded, which just continues to perpetuate poor quality within those environments. So to solve the ECD challenge in South Africa, one has got to ensure that our compliance regimen focuses on the reality of the context under which 63% of South Africa's children live, and make sure that the provision in legislation that gives government the power to assist those providers is exercised. There is provision that enables the minister to assist those providers, because they work under conditions that they are not themselves on their own going to get the infrastructure right and all of the things that are. But smart status is the other one, is the other side. It is closing the gap. And so, but we obviously constantly aware that you have to close the gap in access, but you've got to make sure that children who live in poverty are not structurally, do not continue structurally excluded from access in the manner that is happening right now.
Yeah, no, it does answer. You actually lay out the foundation very well, because that has been my concern as I was doing the research, that already children who are coming from impoverished communities are already starting from a disadvantaged point. So even those who want to provide the service, they are limited because their environment sort of does not allow for that infrastructure. So I made an example when I was speaking to Professor Eric Atmore, that you are staying in an environment that a human being is not supposed to be staying at to begin with. So that is already a social problem. It's not necessarily an education problem, but children are born in this environment. But what do we say that those children, where should those children go to an access education? Are we providing the infrastructure for them to go to a proper school? Because we can't penalize people who are trying to find solutions within the context in which they work from. But then we can try, like Smart Start has done, to find innovative ways of working in those sort of environments. I know that some NGOs would donate those sort of container type of infrastructure to sort of make it a solid infrastructure, but more has to be done. But we can't penalize people for trying to meet policy, to try and meet and access those funds, because you are limited because you don't live up to the standard. Not that you're not providing a service. And then there's also the other component, right? Which is the training component, where we say that the caregivers in, for example, townships, are not necessarily trained to provide early learning. They are caretakers. They are mothers who see that there's a need to bring these children in one environment. And maybe we can sing A, B, C, and D's, but the technical and the pedagogical components are lacking in that regard. Is Smart Start also trying to address those gaps?
So I'm afraid, Yolisa, I'm going to give a long answer again.
Okay, no, that's okay. I'm happy with long answers.
As I say, this is complex. So, you know, because of the, you know, real serious conditions of poverty, but you know, they go deep in a way, sort of multi-generational in nature. We do find that in the poorest communities, the barrier is not, it sort of goes beyond the obvious. That is where you are likely to find people struggling to access education. So So, you know, when you go into impoverished community, you are likely not to find people who can afford, pre-qualification in early childhood development. They can't afford it. It's not cheap. You know, it's not. So they are unable to afford, even if someone is sitting with an ambition to run childhood care and education programs and whatever, they are not likely to afford a pre-training, access.
Yeah.
So what the opportunity and on the other hand, you still sit, you know, if you look at the unemployment figures in South Africa, including among young women, with a massive amount of idle assets of people with the temperament, with the interest, with the ambition, and with the potential to be some of the best early childhood care and educators in the country. But they're sitting there, and we haven't found a mechanism to find many of them en masse, because the entry points are difficult. The entry points require that you have money to go and get the qualification. So that's what one of the big structural elements that Smart Start responds to. We go into the community not with a deficit in mind, but with what assets exist in this community, what can we use to unearth within this community in order to support a group of people who will qualify through our screening process, which is taken very seriously, and be supported to set up a social enterprise as a preschool provider. And so that's sort of on the workforce side of things.
Yeah.
On the pedagogy side of things, that is where a franchise model comes in. Because what we are able to do is package behavior and activities. I mean, that we do the training, and I'll describe that training, but we've packaged activities and behavior and philosophy and, you know, sort of what we're, you know, so defining environments. That is what our franchise is. It's broken down. So what you describe as pedagogy in Smart Start is broken down into a daily routine.
Okay.
Behind that daily routine, strong pedagogical principles that ensure that the child receives comprehensive, evidence-based stimulation and care during the time that they are with the practitioner. And so you're able then to scale that up rapidly to get to many people, because the training that we do is a sort of post-engagement training. So when people have been screened and matched, they then go through a 5-day training, which is really about what are the most important principles that you want to introduce to you. And then once people have passed that training, we assign them a coach. And the coach is their coach for as long as they are in Smart Start. So training becomes like in-service training. They are then formed into community practice. They meet once a month as a group. They go through this, more and more of the content and the training. The coach is there, supports their training. So the training that we have is a step towards a qualification. So we've got unit standards that they get, but it is not NQF level 4, because as I say, for many of them, even that NQF level 4 is not attainable, but it is a pathway. It's like bringing a ladder to someone who wants to go to the top, but they don't have the mechanism to get onto the first rung. And so you bring a ladder for them to say, here's where we can start. But if you work with us, we can climb this ladder, and eventually we will manage to close the gap that is sitting between you and being a qualified, providing provider of early childhood care and education in South Africa. At the same time, children are benefiting.
Yes.
They receive quality. We've evaluated, we've done an evaluation, let me say, of of the Smart Start program using a small sample of children that were baselined and inlined, and we saw the measure of growth that happens during the time that they're in Smart Start. And so you know, it's a progressive, it's a model that enables progressive realization of access for children, but also progress and growth for actually women who continue to be, idle asset in communities. And they are activated, their agency, you see the woman themselves when they come to us at the beginning. And when you come a year later, you find a different person who has a sense of purpose and is rewarded by seeing growth in their children, appreciation in their parents, acknowledgement that they are also contributors to South African economy.
Oh, yes. That is good because, women are actually pillars. We were talking about the nature of femininity and how it is used as sort of like a problem. If we were to look at it closely, there are many leadership qualities within femininity. And if those women possess those already, it's a matter of enhancing what already is embedded in them, which is their asset, really. That's what you're saying. And then I hope I'm not putting you on the spot by asking you this question, since you touched on it, the training component. Is there, or are you working closely with government institutions with regards to training, or is it strictly like a Smart Start model? I'm asking this because maybe there's room to recognize that training and provide like your sort of continuous professional development points into it, or something for a young person or a middle-aged woman who's taking care of children. Because I am also realizing that the training in the sector, particularly in the ECD space, is very informal currently. And if it's not informal, it is offered at TVET colleges, where already TVET colleges are experiencing their own issues. The recognition of a person who comes out of a TVET college does not receive the same benefit as the person who comes out of a university, for example. So there are already those structural differences within the training itself, but I understand also because you providing a solution that is applicable to the context and the environment in which people are living in. But is there some sort of partnership, or are you working towards a partnership that yields towards those goals or results?
Yes, I'm going to, if you allow me, I just want to make one point of what we're just discussing just now. I just want to say that we don't exclude men.
Oh, yes, no, we don't exclude. No, never, never. Never, yo.
I just wanted to make that point clear. But to acknowledge that 98% of our 4,000 or so franchisees across South Africa are women. And I continue to be deeply inspired by the resilience and the drive and the passion from the women. Now to your question about training. I have to say yes. I have to say this happens within the South African training and framework. To answer your question, I know that I'm not answering, I'm not giving you a direct. I mean, we don't have a group of people going to be trained by government or whatever. But the system in South Africa that enables training, particularly of the whole population, not just young people. You know, I know it's probably my own bias, assuming that TVETs are more likely to attract young people than older people, but it's the reality of the responsibility that comes with age. They themselves have their own children. They are unlikely to be able to sign up in a TVET college and attend classes every day. So what we've done is register or provide our training within the ETDP CETA framework.
Oh,
so the CETA framework is the of sort of enabling quality training and making sure that it's accessible to so carelessly the bottom of the pyramid of people who have been excluded, who've been lost by the education system. And so we work, our training is registered with the ETDP CETA, and the training that they go through, as long as they submit their portfolios of evidence, you know, that everyone was within that framework, there are unit standards that accrue to the candidates, to the practitioners.
Yeah.
But it's fantastic because this is happening while they're working, while they're learning in practice, seeing the things that training talks about. They have a coach who's supporting and mentoring them. We have a group of assessors and moderators that are enabling this entire mechanism. And it is training that is still reality of their context. They don't have to go after training to go find the place where they're going to conduct their practicals. They are already the site of practicals. And the training is happening at their own pace, small bites. That retention and relevance and engagement by our practitioner network, our franchisees.
Yeah.
We also, you know, I know you said that training in ECD is an informal thing. There are a good number of ECD organizations in South Africa whose greatest contribution to ECD and quality ECD in South Africa, even as that is excluding of a lot of children. But the biggest contribution is a lot of them are training and development organizations, you know? Yeah. And they do actually provide quite amazing levels of quality training for ECD candidates and ECD professionals. So what we tend to do is in SMART, we start, as I say, we are sort of providing that ladder that gives people a way to close the gap to get to what is unattainable in their communities. When people get to that level, we have had partnerships with some of these ECD training organizations that have taken our practitioners on through NQF level 4 and a very small handful even beyond that up to NQ level 6 of ECD qualification. So it's sort of a partnership that one hopes that those connections, as our network of franchisees grows, those connections with providers of accredited training can continue to also grow, you know, make more and more connections with this ECD training programs, and all of them accredited by you know, accreditation mechanisms like the QCTOs and those kinds of mechanisms that exist out there, providing a sort of a good framework of definition of quality training. It's just that what we've needed is to make a connection between the reality of where people are and what is available.
Definitely. And I like that EDPT CETA is involved in this. They really do some good work. And then since you spoke about earlier on, you touched on a multi-governance approach because ECD has different players who are providing services to young children in South Africa. So you have your Department of Health, your Department of Social Development, and the Department of Basic Education. As a service provider, is it easy to maneuver around the different stakeholders that are involved, the different departments that are involved? Is it manageable?
So, I mean, you keep going towards these big boulders in the way of an aspiring ECD operator. So it's very difficult. It's very difficult for an operator to know, in order for me to get started, what must I do? Who will give me what? It's very clear, though, in policy and legislation, whose role it is to do what. It is clear. I mean, it's very clear to me that the Department of Social Development is entrusted with the responsibility to protect children and make sure that they are safe.
Yes.
So the lens they will apply to the change of ECD is a child protection lens. Mm-hmm. And we've already described the inadequacy of that lens because it is based on the ideal rather than the real on the ground.
Yeah.
You know, that's right. So, but it doesn't make it a complex thing. It's clear, it's true, that's what it is, you know. Department of Basic Education's job is the education of children and making sure that the foundation in education is good and strong. I think that there's great cooperation. There are platforms of engagement between government departments on ECD. I don't think that there's confusion there, but the migration that is proposed or agreed.
Yeah.
ECD from social development to basic education, really what it implies is that it is putting a measurement in what does success look like in ECD. Does it look like happy and safe children, or does it look like happy, safe, and propagulated and prepared children for school? And so this migration tells me that it is adding on to the measurement of success, school preparedness, which is why education is in my view, which is why education is taking it over. There are common issues that an environment of poverty necessitates. And these issues are around things like nutrition of children. In our evaluation, for example, that I described earlier of the evaluation of the Smart Start program or children in the Smart Start program, we found a good proportion of children whose performance had not been, you know, were lower than their peers within that year of evaluation. A mass proportion of them were children who were stunted because of poor nutrition. So at a national level, the mandates are clear. Nutrition is a dual responsibility between health and education for the foundation recognition of that has taken it on and has successfully ensured that children nutrition happens. In the ECD sector, unfortunately, this continues to be one of the biggest costs borne by the operator. Mm-hmm. And that mechanism of ensuring that there's food nutrition has not reached ECD. You know? So, you know, so these children will, under the current conditions, these children will continue to have inadequate nutrition. And then when they start grade R, then they will benefit from school nutrition.
Mm.
In a way, if you think stunting in South Africa, what harm would that have done cognitively for these children by the time they start school? So that is why I'm just saying to you, you know, you keep bringing quite big structural challenges that are facing South Africa at the moment. Nutrition is up there with the best of them. Because, you know, if ECD, the preschool, I mean, all of ECD from zero, you know, pregnant mothers all the way to children starting grade R. If that school nutrition solution that has now reached a point of real good measurable impact can just devolve and see that there are younger children there and that this ECD, as this might happen, it really captures some of those big challenges, you know, and we understand that cooperation with health and education, and that in the health as well, the first 1,000 days is a big focus, but now Smart Start doesn't really work in the first 1,000 days, but we see good opportunity within the health system in that whole, that whole 1,000 days held strongly by the Department of Health and children being transitioned into a Smart Start like, and you know, and all other operators that have done a good job for many, many years.
Yeah.
But with that network support in place, you know what I mean?
That
seems to be one of the biggest challenges that the operators are sitting with. They're having to use the biggest proportion of the income goes to feeding children, which is why we had such a challenge in the lockdown when none of it was able to happen because children were at home. And, you know, there really isn't food at home.
Yeah, and that's a reflection again of who we are as society. So many households are experiencing poverty, and that is the reality. But how it's mirrored then in schools, it looks like government, please provide as well, because this is the challenge that we are experiencing as service providers. So I believe it is truly a reflection, but it's also a call that there's an urgency about it. And that's why we saw what happened with lockdown and also service providers coming together and saying, let's sign this petition, let us reform the sector as well. I get that. And then there's another part, because Smart Start is a franchise. Now, when I think of franchise, I'm thinking KFC, I can buy. So how does the franchising element work? Is it like I can come in and buy a franchise or sponsor a franchise? How does it work?
So, you know, we're a franchise, and we're not very different from KFC in that we want to make sure that you are absolutely clear when you come to Smart Start about what you will get. What you get in that Smart Start site will be the same or similar to what you get in the other Smart Start site in another province, in another context, wherever you are as a Smart Start provider. The difference between a commercial franchise and a social franchise is that a social franchise is measured in, certainly the Smart Start social franchise is measured in social impact, not profit. So we do not charge for the training and the support and the provision, the entire service of the Smart Start franchise. The franchisee does not pay, but someone does pay, you know, an investor who, or some a network of investors who are committed in partnership with Smart Start to closing the gap or to contributing towards closing the gap in access that sort of continues to disadvantage, particularly children in poor environments. Who are committed to making sure that that gap in access is closed. They are the ones who pay. So it's not, and someone does pay, you know, all of these things. There are people who are employed, there's research that's done all the time, there's tools that we purchase, we give everyone a startup kit when they have passed our training. We support them with all kinds of resources that will make stimulation of children possible. Even if they don't pay for that, someone else does pay. And, you know, the biggest state of sustainability of a program like ours is that as we grow our own evidence of impact, both for putting a large number of women to work, meaningful, valuable work, as well as preparing children for school, that government will also be one of the investors in this mechanism. I mean, in some areas, we actually really have very strong relationships with the
provincial.
We have good relationships with some provinces, but in particular, I'm talking about COCTA. Is a the local government mechanism that is, you know, that is focused on the indigent in their own communities. They have a public employment program called Community Works Program. Community Works Program is a program that has partnered quite successfully with Smart Start through one of our investors, the DG Mary Trust. And so what it enables is that, because in appreciation of the fact that in some of these communities, the franchisee is unlikely to be able to draw fees because there is abject poverty, you know? So even if children are on the child support grant, that often in household, that's one of the few sources of income for the entire household, not just for children. And so they struggle a lot for parents to pay fees, and sometimes parents pay 10 rand, 15 rand, 50 rand in some of those communities. And as I described, the cost of food is much, much more than that.
Yeah.
So the program would give a stipend to people. So usually that public restaurant, people are like given a stipend and they are put to work cleaning the streets, fixing broken desks at the school, you know, that kind of thing. They have recognized early childhood care and education as one of the areas where the community works program can be involved.
Yeah.
And they would give a stipend to some of our franchisees that qualify for that, because you have, there's a means test to it. Mm-hmm. And so that becomes a good, you know, a stable source of income where people are likely to grow an enterprise that can register, get more and more children, and get the woman to feel like they're progressing in life. So those kinds of government partnerships are amazing.
Yeah.
And one hopes that we will get to a point where the registration framework I described earlier, that is based on infrastructural requirements and stuff like that, will be amended to enable these women that we are starting up, all of them. I mean, some of them do end up qualifying because they grow into partial care facilities that can be registered and funded. But for many of them in the poorest communities, they will never do that. And one hopes that the current process of amendment of the Children's Act, there's a Children's Amendment Bill out that is being consulted currently. And then one hopes that the biggest opportunity we have with that amendment, with that bill, is to amend the legislation to enable registration of even day mothers, the one that you described, you know, a gogo who looks after children. To us, that's a valuable asset because she already has children. She already is interested, she's already recognized, has a market of people who recognize her as a caregiver or a day mother for children. We want that person because they are trained by us and supported by us, and we know we've measured the quality that they provide. We want that person to also be able to register with the department, whichever department, whether it's social development or education. We recognize as a provider of quality early education.
Yeah, and you already touched on sustainability because I was gonna ask how is the model sustainable, but it's good that businesses are getting involved as well. But also it's like, I think what's interesting about the answer you just gave now is how innovation sort of surpasses all barriers, not necessarily all, but it tries to work around the barriers. Mm-hmm. And for the Department of Corporate Governance and Traditional Affairs to be invested and have an interest in an education program in this way, and also curbing an unemployment problem. It's like we're killing so many problems with just one stone by working collaboratively together in a good way. So in closing, because you touched on sustainability now, but what is it that you would wish for the sector? What are your hopes for the sector? What would you love to see happening in future as well? Yes, there are bills that are currently running. There are petitions that are currently running. We're stressing, but there's also been improvement in the sector. There have been milestones in the sector. I mean, for the fact that Grade R migrated into the Department of Basic Education is a milestone. But what are your hopes and dreams for the sector?
Yeah. So ECD provision broadly in South Africa has really rested on the shoulders of the civil society sector for many, many years, you know, really all the way back to the dawn of democracy, really. ECD has been provided and made possible by private providers. And government has chosen how it will acknowledge them, register them, and fund them. That mechanism falling short, keeping children out, is resulting in poor education outcomes in the foundation phase. We have to do something about that. We cannot continue to keep a mechanism that is irrelevant for the reality of children. What I wish for is an acknowledgement of the role that civil society has played. And I think that does exist, yes. But we would like to see that the migration into Department of Basic Education does not ignore that current asset. That is the biggest asset we have in South Africa. Are all these women who have worked under really, okay, and men, who have worked under really constrained circumstances to get what we have right now. And we would like to see that acknowledgement continue, that partnership continues, and the formalizing of the sector in various ways, in ensuring that nutrition solutions are made accessible to the operators on the ground, in making sure that that ongoing growth and quality monitoring and progression of operators, ECD operators in South Africa is a reality. I walk around and I find a lot of operators hungry for some training. You know, even if they were existing operators, when Smart Start trains new people, there are many existing operators who just want to be part of that training. So, you know, one is that as we reimagine ECD, the barriers of entry are fall away, that there's a strong partnership between civil society and government in the provision of quality in education, that we work together to make sure that we have good data that we use for decision-making, that we have good innovations that develop new evidence of how to solve problems of the future and not be reactive in our orientation. Yes. We make sure that the providers who have been, as I said, been providing such a valuable service are supported even in building the market. That parents in South Africa understand that the early years is one of the most important opportunities for their children. You know, education and their involvement doesn't start with our anxiety about whether or not they're going to pass grade 12. It starts with how we make use of these early years when the brain is so malleable and can that we can take advantage of the educability of the brain, for want of a better. That is something that is recognized as a partnership between civil society and government and the commercial sector. I know you haven't asked this question, but I just want to add something just because I just remembered that we haven't talked about the commercial sector. Okay. You know, our partners that we work with, we cooperate with, they made me aware of a statistic among their population of young people. They work with young people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, young people in creating pathways into jobs. And one of the biggest barriers or exclusion factors for young women, even to go for a job interview, is that they don't, it's like childcare. It's like, where am I going to leave my child in order to, I'm not even talking about job. I'm talking about job interview.
Yes.
Yeah. You know what I mean? So, you know, we're talking about a service that can change the lives of employees and can feed the commercial sector with good employees that will do a good job and can take away the stress of wondering where you're going to leave your child, knowing that there is a provision out there that is, you guaranteed quality, you guaranteed joy and safety and stimulation for your child, and that there's good evidence that shows economic returns on investment for the country. So it's a triple promise here. Yeah. It's employment for mothers, it's good education outcomes for children with a strong foundation in life, it's enterprise and employment opportunities for people who match and have the ability to look after children and care and stimulate them at the same time. Like, do we have a choice as a country? I think not.
Yeah.
I think this is a statement we all have got to make and make in a collaborative and cooperative manner. That it doesn't, none is more important than the other. It is all our responsibility. And, you know, and all of us bring valuable contributions to making it real.
Yeah, and these are our children. This is our future. So we ought to invest our time and energy and money into it. Oh my gosh. Like the point that you just made now about the commercial component as well, it reminded me of when I started university at the University of the Western Cape in my first year during orientation. So we were taken, there's actually a preschool in the university where parents can drop their children off and then attend schooling and then come back. It's like, it's that recognition as well. And I remember as well for me, because my parents my parents studied when they already started working. So when they were studying at then University of the Transkei, currently Walter Sisulu University, there was also a preschool where they would drop us off and then attend their schooling and then come back. And it sort of enabled them to become who they are today. But without that provision, I think it would be more stressful, because when you provide those services in centers where it is made more affordable, it's not an expensive private sort of education, then you're bridging that gap again. I like the point that you just made. Like, I completely forgot about that experience, but it is an advantage to the economy as well.
Totally. There are some providers. I mean, there is an operator. They also use a franchise model who focuses on setting up early learning provision preschools in companies within the private sector. And really hopes that the private sector will take this seriously, because I mean, wouldn't you just work and work and work knowing you don't have to worry about your child?
Yes.
Like you describe your own early years. Like, I mean, wouldn't it be amazing if all of the new housing settlements did not forget that there is early learning provision that has to be provided for?
You know,
informal settlements, all companies that are set up, like, wouldn't it be great if
it would,
that children, not as an afterthought, but as a critical success factor for all of the things done in our country. Wouldn't it be amazing?
It would. Like, oh my gosh. No, thank you so much. Like, some pointers I really did not even consider. And also the research that I've been doing did not even point me towards that direction. But you've provided a lot of insight. Like, I'm amazed at how you also recognize assets within communities that are already impoverished, because it doesn't mean that they don't have the means to. It's just providing the resources so that we can get to that place. And thank you so much for providing that insight. I really appreciate it.
It really is. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.